This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Joy 94.9 with Mal on That Sports Show. Stuart is missing in action on the bench. Hopefully he'll join me shortly. So I'm going to start the show and tell everyone what we're going to talk about tonight. Well, of course, it's 58 days to Rio. We're getting very excited. So less than 2 months till the opening ceremony of the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And I've got a lot to talk to you about the Olympics. There's shooting, swimming, track and field, transgender issues that could dominate the Olympics. Watch this space. Tennis, French Open, wrap up, horse racing and soccer. Now, first up is shooting. Now, Michael Diamond, we told you about last week, was charged for high-range drink driving, that's what they call it in New South Wales, and carrying a shotgun. Now, he's been to court in Raymond Terrace, which is just out of Newcastle, and he's pled not guilty to those charges of high-range drink driving and carrying a shotgun. But his legal team have sought to expedite the hearing because the Australian Olympic team has to be chosen by the 4th of July. So they're seeking to have the hearing expedited so that a decision is made and he can be either available or not available for selection. And, of course, our friend at the AOC, Kitty Chiller, she will determine whether he's a fit and proper person depending on the outcome of that hearing. Also in Olympic news this week, our Australian swimmers, who we call the Dolphins, are well on track or in pool for the Olympic swimming there in Rio. And they had a record-breaking swim meet in the Santa Clara Pro Swim in California. Now, Jess Ashwood set a new Australian 800-metre freestyle record, and she was one of five Australian winners on the final day of the meet, which boasted some of the US stars as well. Jess Ashwood, who will contest the 400 and the 800 events at Rio, stopped the clock at 8 minutes, 18 and 4.14 seconds, which is the second fastest time in the world this year. And that puts her in medal contention at Rio. So good time for her to be improving her times. Now, other winners at Santa Clara were Emily Seebohm and Mitch Larkin, who both won the 200 backstroke. Now, their teammates in the pool, and they're a couple out of the pool. So they're our golden couple of the pool. And then also Emma McKeown and James Magnusson both won the 100 metres freestyle. James Magnusson will only, of course, contest the 4x100 metre freestyle relay at Rio. He's been announced in the team just this week, along with Matthew Abud and James Roberts, and they will join Kyle Chalmers and Cameron McAvoy. That was a good swim meet there in Santa Clara in California. And the entire Dolphins team will also contest a Grand Prix meet in Brisbane from the 1st to the 2nd of July. And that will mean they'll be only about 30 days out from Rio. And also in Olympic news this week, one of my favourites, Melissa Breen, as her full name is, has finally qualified for the Olympics in the 100 metres. She ran 11.31 in Townsville, and she made the cutoff by 0.01 of a second. Now, of course, she's our fastest Australian ever. So looking forward to her efforts in Rio.
What she did there, Malcolm, was she actually waited until the wind was slightly behind her, and
yes,
then went, but not far enough to make it illegal, and she went for that hair's breadth Olympic qualifying time and got it.
Welcome to the show, Stuart.
Thank you.
Yes, what they did actually was they rescheduled her event for the wind conditions so that she would run first thing in the morning instead of in the afternoon, because the conditions would be favourable. So they rescheduled the meet for her so that she could qualify. So that was really great news for her. Now, Stuart, also in Olympic news, running
in the longer distances.
In the Diamond League. I couldn't get the words out. The Diamond League in Birmingham. Our Sally came back for her first race. Now, she was pleased to be on the starting line and running, although she was disgusted with the time, but she knows that she's happy that she's out there and doing it, and she's got 58 days, as I announced at the start of the show, to improve her her standing. Now, she ran 13.25. Now, that's not fast in her standards, but she'll be up there. Now, also, Morgan Mitchell ran a PB of 51.45 in the 400 metres. She got a podium finish. And your favourite athlete...
Yeah, Fabrice LaPierre finished third in the men's long, which is great. I think he'll probably medal in the Games. That's what he's going for.
8 metres 21. And he, along with Henry Frayne and Mitchell Watt, they're all in contention. But I wanted to say your favourite athlete, Eloise Poppet-Wellings.
Wellings, yes. Yeah, she ran 15:26.19, which is great. She
in the 5,000 metres.
She'll struggle in the five against the competition she'll face in the Games, but she's doing well. And Genevieve Lacaz, who's also in the team, was just behind her in 15:27. So we'll have two good.
Well, she's not actually in the five. She's in the steeplechase, but her 5,000, that's a PB by like 15 seconds, and that's good for her steeplechase form. Now, also in athletics news, Stuart, Usain Bolt may lose his gold medal in a relay event from London after Michael Carter failed a drugs test. And, of course, if you're in the relay, if one of them's failed a drugs test, that means the other three lose their medals.
That is a controversial point, because it hasn't always been the case. When American Marion Jones was stripped of her two relay medals from the Sydney Games for doping offences, her teammates actually kept theirs after they successfully appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So welcome to litigation in sport. But I think...
I don't agree with that.
Well, we've tightened up since then, and so there is an impact. And it's quite problematic for Usain, because he took the sprint world by fire and won the one, the two and the relay.
Yes.
And to actually lose that because of a team member must be devastating.
I know, but that's how it is. There's four in a team, Stuart, not one or not three.
But behind Bolt, who holds the world record with a 9.58, every other man who's run under 9.8 has actually served a drugs ban, with Tyson Gay, Jonathan Blake, Powell, Justin Gatlin, all falling foul of anti-doping regulations.
I wonder at the back of my mind if Usain Bolt is clean. And he's clean until proven dirty. So you're innocent until proven guilty. Also in Rio running. Now, this could be the story of the Games. Transgender issues could be the story of the Games, because... our favourite South African athlete, Caster Semenya, she is dominating the world of 800 metres at the moment. She ran a 1:55.45 in Berlin Diamond League recently. When she qualified for the Games, she won in their trials in South Africa, all within a space of a couple of hours, the 400, the 800 and the 1500, all in world-class times. And that's amazing. She's not far off the world record of my favourite name, Jarmila Kratchovilova.
No, it's actually Jarmila Kratchovilova.
Oh,
she won the 400. I remember in Canberra.
Yeah, but she in that World Cup meet.
Yes.
No, that was Marita Kock.
Oh, true. Yes.
Who has the world record?
Yes.
But Jarmila's from the Czech Republic, and her world record is 1:53.28. I remember seeing her run. She was quite a muscular, big-framed woman. And at that time, there was a lot of drugs going on, but maybe they didn't detect them for her.
I mean, 1:53, there's only a couple of Australians who've ever gone under 2 minutes.
Well,
no,
men.
No, well, 2 minutes in the eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Women.
Yes.
Yes, yeah, they're way off. But Caster Semenya, if she does really well, that will be such a big news story. And good luck to her, because she is a woman. She just has high levels of testosterone because of her nature. And I wish her luck, and I hope that the haters don't get to her and that she performs at her best.
Yes, but now tennis at the Games is going to be fascinating. Your favourite Aussie male has made the team, I think.
Well, not quite yet. John Millman and Jordan Thompson are now in the running for the Australian tennis because Nick Kyrgios has now made himself unavailable, and so did Bernard Tomic. Kyrgios feels that he was badgered by our favourite Kitty Chiller. I've already mentioned her before you made it into the studio. John Millman and Jordan Thompson, they are our top ranked, and they might be able to make it, but they haven't played Davis Cup for Australia, and so Australia will have to appeal to the Court of Arbitration Sport to get them in, because you only get the top four ranked from your country, and some countries like Spain have like 15 in the top 100. So John Millman would definitely make it on rankings, but I'm not sure about Jordan Thompson.
And there's also a couple of requirements that you need to have had some Davis Cup or Fed Cup experience. So Daria Gavrilova may not actually...
Well, she has played once, and they will appeal to get her in, but Sam Stoes is definitely in. Now, that segues me into the French Open. With my injured knee, Stuart, I spent a lot of time on the couch watching the tennis. And amazing, Novak Djokovic won the French Open in the men's. He now holds all four Grand Slam titles at once. And that is the first time since Rod Laver in 1969. And if he wins Wimbledon and the US Open, he's won a Grand Slam. And I would then call him the greatest of all time.
Yes, well deserved if he does.
Yeah, he's won 12 Grand Slams now. He's two behind Rafael Nadal on 14. And Roger Federer is on 17. And 12 is not that far behind 17 when you're playing like he is, and he's still only 28. So watch out, world. He could become the greatest tennis player of all time.
But now, what about Serena? She was going for that crown, or on the way to that crown.
She was going to equal Steffi Graf's 22. Yes. Now, Serena ran into Garbiñe Muguruza from Spain, who outplayed her. Now, Garbiñe played in the semis, our Sam Stoes. She made it to the semis, and that was really exciting. But she was outplayed early on in the match, but then got into it, but was always playing catch-up and couldn't quite get it. But Serena has realised she's now got a new rival. This Garbiñe Muguruza, she plays like Maria Sharapova does, but she plays better, and she plays smarter. Anyway, so it was a great tournament all up, and amazing match to watch was the women's doubles when the French won it, first time in 45 years, and then Andy Murray made the men's final. He was the first British male to make the final since the 1930s, like 86 years or something. So all these amazing things. But the big thing about Paris this year was the rain, and it's told them that they need to have roofs over their courts. So, that was amazing news. Now, following on from Serena, now with Maria Sharapova's future in limbo, Serena Williams is now the highest paid sportswoman in the world, $28.9 million, Stuart. Maria, however, still holds second spot with $21.9 million. Now, Maria held that spot for 11 years, from the age of 17 when she won Wimbledon till now. It's amazing.
What really startled me about that top 10 in terms of the highest earnings
women, yes.
How many of them play tennis? I mean, the only ones who don't play tennis was there's a NASCAR driver.
Danica.
That's right.
Yeah, Danica, I've lost her name.
And there's an American martial arts...
Oh, Danica Patrick. And, of course, Ronda Rousey, who came here to Melbourne for that big fight, and she lost. She's number three at 14, and Danica Patrick is 13.9, and then the rest are all tennis players.
Tennis is, I tell you what, when we have our child, she will be playing tennis in the Nick Bollettieri Academy.
That's right.
Earning that sort of money.
Well, that's because our goal is to be in the Royal Box at Wimbledon with our child, right?
If we can't do it ourselves.
Yeah, we do it through our children. So Poland's Agnieszka Radwańska, Dane Caroline Wozniacki, Garbiñe Muguruza, who we had just announced, Serban Ivanovic, Victoria Azarenka and Eugenie Bouchard make out the rest of the top 10. They used to have women's golfers in that top league, but they've fallen by the way.
Just in terms of the money, yeah.
But also
another female sports person, Michelle Payne, looks like she will continue to continue her winning ways in being a jockey.
Yes.
She has refused to say, "I'm giving up" after her injury. and she still has the fire in the belly to compete in another spring racing carnival.
Well, good luck to her, but depending on her health. But she still wants to go on. Now, briefly, we must mention the Socceroos lost to Greece last night, 2-1 at Dockland Stadium, and the Matildas won all draw with the
New Zealand.
The something ferns, they're called. The soccer ferns, I don't know. And that was a one-all draw in front of 33,622 people. But the other news was that the soccer hooligans were lighting flares in the streets and violence. We don't need that.
No.
Let's just enjoy and watch the game. Now, Stuart, we're going to talk to our triumphant Melbourne Chargers rugby union team to tell us all about their magnificent win in the World Cup of Gay Rugby, the Bingham Cup in Nashville, Tennessee. So look forward to speaking to Matt Arthi and Andrew Fitzmanu. Hopefully I've pronounced it right.
You're on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
Now, in the studio tonight, we have got some amazing fellas with us. We've got Matt and Andrew from the Melbourne Chargers, who were triumphant with the Melbourne Chargers at the Bingham Cup in Nashville, Tennessee, just this past week. Welcome, fellas.
G'day. How are you going?
Good. We're good. Come a bit closer to your microphone there, Andrew, so we can hear you. We were amazed that you won. It's so good, and you beat Sydney.
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing week.
Yes,
to be together as both our teams.
Yeah,
collectively as a group, I think we've galvanised our team to be one of the best in the world, and we are world champions coming home.
Well, so that means you are the best in the world.
We are the best in the world.
Now, Andrew, give us a rundown of the pool matches that the Chargers played in their A team.
Pool matches. Okay. I should have remembered this.
How could you forget?
They were big wins, weren't they?
They were big wins. So we didn't concede any points. So in one of our pool matches, we came up against the San Francisco Fog.
Yes.
That we played against in the plate final last year.
Yes.
So it was kind of great to see the same players that we played 2 years ago.
And then you beat them?
And we beat them. Yes, we did.
Big score? You're not remembering. Matt, do you remember the score?
It was definitely past 50.
Okay, 50-something nil. Yep.
Yeah.
Next one?
Who did you play next?
I think we played the Renegades.
Yeah,
Washington
did.
Renegades, the B team.
And that's, yes, Washington, yes.
Yeah, and that was, we didn't concede a point against them either.
Yes.
Point score for that one there while Maddie's checking that out.
I'm just trying to look for it too.
I have a different thing about sport where I kind of not focus on the scoreboard and it's
focused. You focus on the game and the man itself that you've got to pull down on the ground.
I guess
the point that we're making, though, is just how wide the competition was in terms of the number of teams that were there. 50-something teams in total?
I think approximately there were 46 teams across 26 countries.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then who did you play next after Washington?
Maddie's going to check that out.
Oh, okay. Right,
check it. The main thing from the whole trip was you crammed 6 matches into 3 days.
Yeah, so you played 3 pool matches, or 4 pool matches, and a semi and a final.
3 pool matches. Then it goes into quarters, semis, and then
finals. Alright, do you remember who you played in the quarters?
Do you remember?
And who did you beat?
So in the quarters, we you're putting me on the spot here. quarters, we played...
you played...
Thank you, Maddie.
I'm trying to find.
Well, it's really
you.
Sudden death, isn't it? I've got to win 3 finals in a row.
Well, I'd remember who I beat, Stuart, wouldn't you?
Okay, I can remember now because I'm looking at it.
All right, tell me. All right, Matt, tell me.
So, across the 3 days, the A's.
Yes.
I'm just waiting for it to load. The B's played.
You tell me about the B's
because
you played for the B's, Matt.
Yeah, so we played for the B's, and we were put into a division that we weren't 110%. Meant to be in.
Yes.
We were put in the same division as the A's.
So, oh, right. So
our quality of the teams are absolutely ridiculously awesome. And we played our hearts out and played our guts out. I don't think we've ever played any better football, ever.
Did you score?
We nearly got there. across the board. But again, we played the San Francisco Fog, a foundation team.
Yes.
We played the King's Cross Steelers, a foundation team.
Yes.
And as probably people know, when Mark Bingham passed away in 2001, there was six teams, and now there's 60 worldwide. Yeah. So it's a pretty amazing thing. And the best part of it was that San Francisco Fog, we played Mark Bingham's best friend, and he was in there, and he's still running around today.
Oh, of course, and he will never give up.
Yeah, and the fantastic thing is we made them work really hard, we made them really tired, and then the A's ran over the top of them in the afternoon.
So it was all the plan. Have they come up, those results?
Yes, we have now.
All right, tell me. Come on, Andrew.
Okay, so... we play the Gotham Knights as our quarterfinal.
And the score?
And that was 34-0.
Lovely.
Are they a San Francisco team?
No, New York.
New York.
Gotham City.
Gotham, yeah.
Semis.
They're actually one of the stronger teams I've actually ever seen and played against. Really big lads. And then in our semifinal, we played the Washington Renegades. And in that game, we did concede our first point against
them. That's okay.
Them.
You still won.
Well, you know...
What was the score?
That one there. Oh, I'm trying to bring that up. Well, Maddie brings it up. I think it was...
They were closer than the preliminary round.
32-6 or something?
Yeah.
All right. Now, what about the final?
The final?
Against our friends, the Sydney Convicts.
I love them a lot, is what I'm going to say. I do.
Yes, we do.
I've actually made good friends with our opposition players because we've played them quite a few times over the last 3 years. So you do get to know the opposition. I'm a prop, so you kind of get quite intimate with them in the scrum. Mm.
I want to get intimate in the shower with the one in that scrum movie. The Canadian one.
Brennan.
Oh, him.
Did you think from the outset that it might be an All-Australian final? Did you think Sydney was the main rival?
Well, actually, we had internal talks with our team. We actually thought the Brisbane Hustlers were probably going to take it out.
What happened to them?
They actually got knocked out in the semis against the Convicts.
Oh, okay. And so they played off for third with Washington. And they beat them?
Actually, we don't play for third or fourth in that division. So once it's knockout, so purely if you lose the game, you're gone.
You're gone. Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm. Okay, that's really
it's a phenomenal result.
It is. Oh, we are the best gay rugby country in the world. And having said that, one of our players here is a straight mate. Matt's one of our straight allies, but he plays with the gay team, and that's good. Any other straight allies on the team, Matt?
Yeah, there's actually a few. It's growing. We're still the minority, if we're going to say the majority of the two, but it is growing, and I think the fantastic thing about having the allies is that people for the same cause come together. And
you have to find yourself to be accepted amongst the team and the community.
And I think a cool thing is that it's in a way bridging a gap.
Yes.
And it's allowing everyone to feel included, because it's all about teamship and mateship. And that's
right.
I've definitely found a lot of friends here.
That's good. And a shout out to your wife.
Yeah. Shout out to my wife.
What's her name?
Kat.
Kat.
So,
Kat.
Yeah.
We don't do that often on this show.
No, we don't.
I was amazed.
Yeah, that's okay. Shout out to your wife, Kat. But I'm going to ask you now, who would you turn gay for then?
I was thinking about this, and it would probably be Gerard Butler.
The actor.
Yeah, the actor.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be frank about it.
That's all right. And what about you, Andrew? Who would you turn for?
That's a difficult question for Andrew, I think.
For the opposite.
For the opposite?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
You've never even thought about this.
Have you?
I did. I have thought about this. Angelina Jolie.
Okay, yes. Fair enough.
I think I would.
Okay,
good. Welcome you.
Mine's Megan Gale, as long as she doesn't talk. And Stuart?
She's a tall girl.
Then we'd have tall children.
Hmm. Yeah. I'd be more.
Because I'm short.
I think I'd go for one of those tennis players in that top 10 list.
Serena. You and Serena. No, oh, my God.
Another one.
You'd have massive legs, because you got big legs like she has.
Moving on.
Anyway, it's been great talking to you fellas about the Bingham Cup and the win. Next time, we want to see the trophy so we can ding it on air. next time, you come in and talk about rugby with the Melbourne Chargers. But congratulations.
Thank you.
Champions of the world.
Yeah. Yes.
And we'll talk again soon.
We've done a lot of sport. We've covered a lot. We've covered a lot of Rio today, and a lot of drugs issues in sports and a lot of selection issues, including the Michael Diamond controversy.
Yep. We certainly have. And we'll be back next week talking to Dane McManus from Team Melbourne. You've been on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
You're on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.